Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
The first case of cholera in over a decade has been recorded in the country, as new stats show that post-COVID, the country has seen cases of leprosy, dengue fever, malaria and West Nile fever. Details released by the Health Protection and Surveillance Centre and reported in today's Irish Independent show a rise in many cases of exotic illnesses in the past 2 years. Well, for more on this, we're joined by Dr. Graham Fry, Medical Director with the Tropical Medical Bureau. Good morning to you, Graham.
Hi, good morning to you too.
The first cholera case recorded by the HPSC, that's according to reports today in The Independent. Can you talk to us about, first of all, what is the disease?
Okay, cholera is one of these bacterial diseases that you basically get into your body through what you eat and drink. Nearly always drink, but it could be food as well. When it gets into your system, it causes severe diarrhea in some cases. Now, the one thing to bear in mind, Colm, is that many cases don't. They can be asymptomatic. They may have the disease, they may be passing it through in the stool motion, but nevertheless, they're personally not affected. So that's one thing to bear in mind. So when we say there's been one reported case, there may have been others that we just haven't picked up on because the person's fine. But fundamentally, it's a disease which you're going to get from drinking dirty brown water. Typically, now it could be food, as I said before, but typically it's dirty brown water. The person has consumed it by mistake or without thinking, etc. And then they can get the bad diarrhea, etc. So it's a horrific disease. And in many patients throughout the world who do get it, they're typically living in the back of beyond, obviously, where situation is nowhere near as good as ours. But nevertheless, if they do, then there can be a high mortality rate from the disease itself.
All right. So it passes through your system, as you say, comes out in fecal matter. Hand washing, clearly important here. But where in somewhere like Ireland might that come out elsewhere? Is it with food handling that cholera might be passed on? Is it, you know, with contaminated water as a result of sewage leaks? Where might it crop up here?
Okay, well, first of all, the humans have to give it into the water supply for the water supply to become infected in the first place, and that is not at all likely to happen in Ireland. So the chances are of it happening here in Ireland is immensely small. You might say there's a theoretical risk. The one person who's been diagnosed recently with it, if they didn't wash their hands, if they were helping somebody else who was immunocompromised, perhaps, then they may pass the disease on to them. But even that's very rare. It really is that very uncommon. As long as you stick with normal personal hygiene, washing hands, etc. So the risks are primarily associated with drinking contaminated water. And it's not clean water. It may give you salmonella, shigella, cryptosporidia, cyclosporine, all sorts of things. So the cholera-infected water typically is quite brown. It's quite dirty. You have to get a lot of the cholera bacteria into yourself because the gastric acid will kill it off in almost every case. So if you have a good acid in your stomach, hopefully that'll actually protect you to a huge extent. So the people who are at risk are anyone who's had gastric surgery, perhaps, or people who are taking one of the what we call PPI drugs, a drug which reduces your acid in your stomach. That may be a risk factor because you've less acid there to protect you.
Okay. And any particular foodstuffs that might be, you know, shellfish have been identified in other areas. Would that be one where cholera is passed on, or are you looking at more like hepatitis or the like for that?
No, shellfish can transmit a lot of different diseases. Obviously, it depends where they are because they're filter feeders. They suck it into themselves. And so if you're going to eat shellfish which had not been prepared correctly, then you're potentially at risk of many diseases. Cholera is just one of them, but many other diseases as well, okay. Obviously.
What's so the treatment for cholera?
The main treatment is fluid replacement. So you have to get the fluid and the electrolytes back into the person if they're in a bad state. They may be able to drink in fluid, and that's by far the best way. But if they were sick and they're not able to drink, then you have to drop intravenous fluid and make sure they have enough fluid going in. And of course, in a really, really severe case, that can be a huge amount of fluid. Okay. So to try and get them through it.
Leprosy, Graham, detected here in recent years. People might be shocked when they hear about that. They might associate leprosy in Ireland with the Middle Ages and people returning from crusades and the like. How did it get here? And first of all, I suppose, what causes the disease itself?
Oh, okay. When I first went to Congo back in 75, we had a leprosy camp with about 400 patients. We now have leprosy patients coming to the hospital about once a year. It's that rare. So since 1980s, the treatment has changed hugely. The one thing just to bear in mind from our point of view is leprosy has a long incubation period, a ridiculously long incubation. So if you were exposed to leprosy, which, by the way, among tourists is really uncommon, but if you were, you may not have any symptoms for 3, 4, 5 years after that. And then the symptoms are confusing. And to an Irish doctor, of course, they're not going to think leprosy top of the list. So that's where it may delay the diagnosis. Now, if somebody's just come from a part of the world where there still is leprosy active, the Asian subcontinent is probably the most common one. But if they have, then, of course, the doctors here in Ireland are going to consider it as a possibility. But if they are an Irish person who is away working overseas, maybe for a few months and was exposed, they may not develop symptoms for years later, which is one of our problems, right, just trying to think outside the box.
People may have heard the distinction drawn between wet and dry leprosy. Is there any difference in the infection rates in those? Or, you know, what is the difference?
Okay, well, there's tuberculoid leprosy and lepromatous leprosy. So they're the two end runners, and in the middle there's three other semi-varieties of those three. Tuberculoid leprosy is the one where you can lose the feeling to fingers and toes, etc. And those are the ones you've seen pictures of people who've lost a couple of fingers because they can't protect themselves against sensation. They haven't any sensation, so they do things and the bones wear back into the body. That's tuberculoid leprosy. That one actually is not that infectious to other people. It is, but not that infectious. Okay. Lepromatous leprosy, which is the other type, I think you're referring to it as a wet leprosy, if you like, that is much more contagious. And those patients have lumps and bumps around the body. It may affect the eyes, it may affect the eyebrows, and nasal collapse, all sorts of bits and bobs. But I mean, immensely rare. Okay. I think the only important thing is doctors working here in Ireland, we just have to think outside the box a little bit. In other words, every patient you see, whether it be with irritable bowel or whether it be with funny neurological problems, etc., one question to always ask is, have you travelled in the last 6 to 12 months? Now, as I said before, leprosy is even longer than that, but at least have you travelled in the last 6 months? And if you have, put that into your differential.
Zika was one that came up in South America a number of years ago. People were concerned that people who'd been infected with Zika, children were being born with smaller than normal heads. But where does Zika virus come from and where is it prevalent?
Okay. Zika basically is a dreadful disease. It's been around. It was first recognized in 1947 in Uganda, in a Zika forest in Uganda. So it's been around for 70, 80 years. We've had no interest in Zika up until recently. 2015, it hit South America eventually. So it got from Africa to India to Southeast Asia, South Pacific, and eventually got to South America, 2015. In 2015, 2016, a number of babies were being born with this microcephaly, which is where the skull is frozen, basically. It's stuck, and it can't expand to accommodate the actual brain trying to expand. And that's the disaster. That's a horrible situation. Now, don't forget, microcephaly is a genetic abnormality, occurs all over the world, nothing to do with Zika. But when they were seeing in Brazil a huge increase in the number of babies born with this condition, they said, could this be Zika? I'm afraid most of us thought that's ridiculous. It has to be pollution or radiation or thalidomide-type drug or something like that. But it's been shown that it is Zika. Now, the main thing to bear in mind is since that time, the number of cases in Brazil, as an example, there's many other countries, obviously, but Brazil is an example. The number of cases is actually dropping. But the reason it's dropping is because people had got the disease last year, the year before. So now they're protected. They are protected. People who aren't protected are people like ourselves coming from Ireland, where we don't have Zika. We don't have the mosquitoes to give us Zika. So we're the ones who are mainly at risk, people coming from areas of the world where they haven't been exposed before.
Is there a vaccine?
No, they're working on it, but they haven't got there yet. It's one of these things that may come about. Right? It's just people need to bear in mind, if you're actually going to be going to some of these areas, the hot tropical areas typically, but it is spreading. It's heading in towards southern France initially in those areas as well, just because the temperatures. But if people are traveling to those sort of regions, particularly Africa, Asia, South America, and they're planning a pregnancy within a 3-month period, they should bear in mind this is a risk factor.
Malaria. There was a drop off during COVID because people just weren't travelling, as we said at the outset. Sure. But malaria is one that's back to high levels, is it? What's high in terms of the levels of malaria in the country?
Okay, well, from the Irish point of view, it's typically between 60 and 70 cases every single year, 60, 70, 80 maybe every year. So I think the current ones are around the late 80s. So it is slightly higher, but don't forget, people are travelling more now. Because of COVID, there's a huge drop-off. Now everyone wants to travel. So we're seeing far more people travelling overseas these days than we were in the past. I think the other thing to bear in mind is the scepticism over tablets. If you remember back in the early 90s, Ilarium was one that was blamed for all sorts of problems. And so people got a very bad impression of the malaria tablets. The ones we use nowadays, Malarone typically, is very safe. Very, very seldom causes problems. Not never, of course. Mm. Of course, you can get exceptions. But generally speaking, it's a very good, safe drug.
Yeah, bit of memory loss when you're using it.
Well, that's because it's a daily tablet, and Colin, people like you and me, we're men, we don't remember daily tablets. So, I mean, that's a little bit different. But no, I mean, fundamentally, it shouldn't. Malarone has very few side effects in the vast majority of patients. Okay. So a lot of the worry is because of an older drug that we used to use, not the ones we use nowadays.
So dengue fever, 20 cases, is it in 2023? What is that and where does it come from?
Dengue is another mosquito-borne. I don't forget dengue, chikungunya, Zika, and many others. They're transmitted by mosquitoes. And you mentioned West Nile there at the start of this conversation. They're all mosquito-borne diseases. So where are the mosquitoes? We don't have them in Ireland. The reason we don't have them in Ireland is because basically the climate isn't up to it. In other words, the climate doesn't give a mosquito long enough to live to become a problem. So when it gets malaria into the mosquitoes, an example, it takes a week, 10 days before that malaria parasite is infectious to the next person. And our mosquitoes die prior to that because of the colder climate. So typically, if your dengue is more obviously present, in other words, you'll get symptoms from dengue in many cases. So if there's dengue in an area, there probably is chikungunya, there probably is Zika, and many other conditions as well. So people do need to be careful trying not to get bitten.
And
so
briefly, the treatment for it?
There is no treatment. It's supportive treatment. Just before you run away, can I just mention one thing? We're into a hot spell at the moment. So it's supposed to be hot today, tomorrow, the next few days. If we get heavy rainfall this weekend or on Monday, Tuesday next week, people going into fresh water need to be careful. Leptospirosis, Viles disease, rat's urine disease, that's a disease in Ireland that we typically see after very heavy rainfall. After a dry spell has gone on for a while and then a heavy rainfall washes that into the rivers, etc., into the lakes, and people go swimming. And then they make it lepto. And leptospirosis is a really serious disease. So people just should be aware to be careful. If we're going to have dry, a lovely, beautiful weather for the next 3, 4, 5 days, and then perhaps we get a heavy rainfall, that's when you want to be particularly careful.
Okay, Dr. Graham Fry, Medical Director of the Tropical Medical Bureau, thanks very much for joining us on that. Coming up, what are double duty dinners? You're about to find out with Chef Aisling Larkin.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.